I look back at my 20s, my early 30s, and I think about how stressed I got all those times that I was just, okay, I'm in a job that I don't really like, but once I get this next job, I'll be happy. And once I, meet the woman of my dreams, I'll be happy. Happiness is not waiting for us around some corner that we're never going to turn. It's right here, right now.
Welcome to the Wise Millennial Podcast. Join host Peter Noble Darrow as he interviews entrepreneurs building modern community. What brings us together? What motivates us? What are we really seeking in life, deep to our core? Great question. We can often be trapped in limited ways of thinking. So let's challenge millennial culture together. The truth is, we are more alike than we are different. This is your community. You are a wise millennial.
I'm here with Jonathan Stone of Flow and Tell Yoga. Say hello, Jonathan.
How's it going, wise millennial team? Good to be with y'all today.
So I got connected to Jonathan through our mutual friend, Jackie Cantwell of Medi Club and The Big Quiet, who appeared as a guest on a previous podcast episode. And I asked Jackie, I said, who should I talk to from the Medi Club community who's building really cool things? And she immediately mentioned Jonathan. So here you are.
Awesome. Yeah. It's a pleasure to be with you. Jackie's a dear friend, big Medi Club fan. So thanks, Jackie, for connecting us.
Yeah, she's the best. So Jonathan, briefly tell us a little bit about Flow and Tell. What is it? How did you come up with the idea?
So Flow and Tell started, I actually got the like very germs of the idea when I was on my yoga teacher training almost 3 years ago in Mexico. And I've been a pretty devout yoga practitioner for about 13 plus years now. Really started cultivating my practice in like 2007, 2008. It's been such a major part of my life in terms of dealing with the stresses and anxieties of living in a city like New York.
Sure.
And I always felt that.
Just curious, do you remember your first yoga? Like, how did you even discover it?
Yeah, I was living in New Orleans doing Katrina disaster recovery relief in 07, 08. And I remember there was a great studio, a hot yoga studio, pretty close to where I was living uptown. I think it was called Yoga 108. And I remember going in and just, it was a beautiful studio, gorgeous art on the walls. They it was one of those studios that had like only one mirror in the front, so like you were very much front focused so that you could align your posture. And I just remember feeling that I, after loving fitness for my entire life, I used to run, I used to play basketball. I say used to because I tore a meniscus when I was living in New Orleans and could no longer really do high impact activity. And then it was discovering yoga commensurate with my rehab process, and I realized that this is maybe the best activity I have discovered for not only the physical fitness benefits, but to feel the mental, the spiritual, the emotional relief. I realized that there was something to this, and that I was not only feeling like I got a great workout every time I left, but I was feeling much more centered, more mentally balanced, able to sort of, not necessarily having yoga solve all of my problems, but knowing that it was going to give me a much clearer head to deal with them logically and rationally.
Sure. So then how did that merge to Flow and Tell?
Flow and Tell was born out of this idea of rather than just letting the experience begin and end with yoga, let's use yoga as the catalyst to deep, meaningful discussion over dinner, followed by live music performance, which are basically my three favorite things in the world. Most of the times that we do yoga, it's in a studio. We go in, we have that hour of just being fully connected in the experience of the studio, but that the classes would then end and everybody kind of makes a mad dash for the exit, gets back into their crazy hectic lives in New York City. And I really felt that there was a missed opportunity there. I felt that what better time could there be to now connect with all of these people that we clearly have a shared interest in, this common bond of yoga. And I threw out this invite to a few friends. I said, hey guys, kind of been noodling on this idea for a little while. Are you guys interested in coming over? I'm going to host us. I'm going to take in food. It's totally free. I just want to see if this idea will resonate. And if you actually go to the homepage of Flow and Tell, well, we've now had over 60 different events over the last year and a half. The photo that I feel we got from the very first one taken by my very dear friend Phoebe, I feel like just encapsulates it perfectly. We're flowing into the sunset as the sun sets over the Hudson River. My friend Duran was playing cello as we kind of came out of Shavasana. And it was this beautiful way of telling the story of taking yoga out of the conventional studio, bringing it into beautiful, scenic panoramic rooftops, gorgeous, estates. We've done weekend retreats, which we'll get to later, but taking it out of the studio, bringing it into these beautiful places, and then funneling it right into a discussion over dinner, always with a particular theme, followed by live music performance.
No, I love that. I mean, it sounds beautiful, and often the best ideas are combining your own passions, right? I mean, you'll only be successful in things you're passionate for. What kind of yoga is it? I mean, can you just educate us briefly on the different types?
Yeah, so I've always loved a good power vinyasa flow. I think that vinyasa of the different styles that I've studied, hatha, ashtanga, kundalini, it's kind of the most metaphorical for life. You kind of like really go through the flows. You're going to experience some obstacles. There's a lot of heavy emphasis on inversions, which to me are like, you know, the challenges that we're going to go through in life, right? When you throw the human body upside down and try to hold a handstand for a minute, you're going to see the body start to freak out and start to breathe really heavily. And so I've always loved how there's a lot of metaphors that I think I've learned in vinyasa in the sequence that I've been able to apply to my regular life. And so I really enjoy teaching that in the classes.
Why is the post-yoga portion of the evening so important?
Because there's that missed opportunity that I always felt, they always say that the greatest, businesses are always started when like you feel a need that, for something that you want to exist out in the world that doesn't exist yet, just go and create it yourself, right?
Right. Sure.
Gary Vaynerchuk, who's a huge inspiration for me, speaks a lot about this. Like, if there's something out there that no one's doing, just go and do it. And so there are probably, I don't even know, tens of thousands, let's say, yoga studios all around the world that are all doing beautiful work. And from Moto Yoga to, Yoga Vida to Jiva Mukti, may they rest in peace. There's amazing yoga studios all around New York City, but I felt that none of them were really tapping into this idea of yoga-based community. So how can we actually leverage the power of yoga to then engage with others? There were so many times that I just left the class feeling like, oh my God, we have the, what people call the yoga high, right? Your mind is elevated, your conscience is clear, your body feels absolutely amazing, your endorphins are, flying off the charts. What do we do with that energy? 95% of the time, we just go right back to our busy lives in New York City.
Right.
And that energy can vary, that Zen state that we spent 60 to 90 minutes cultivating can very quickly evaporate. And so that's where I realized that there was this power of then engaging with one another in a curated dinner experience. And by curated, I mean, it is very much a guided conversation where there are quotes, there are themes, there are prompts. I know that you're also a fan of Medi Club, so very much, inspired by what Medi Club has done, where they sort of get you connecting with some of the people that you might not know. We only have two, I do not call them rules, but recommendations as we exit yoga and go into dinner. And that's, please do not talk about work. So do not ask anyone what they do for a living.
Do not ask
job titles. And then please don't sit next to anybody that you know. And what happens is we watch this kind of magical, experience begin to unfold, where people begin breaking down those walls that we typically get in New York City, where very quickly we find ourselves talking about our work and we find ourselves talking about the weather and, you know, local sports teams. And it's very superficial conversation,
right,
which I think directly correlates to the level of connection that you're able to form with somebody. When you start talking about things like the limiting beliefs that are holding you back from living your highest potential, where in your life are you not expressing enough gratitude? What are some of the tools and methodologies that you've used for coping with anxiety,
right,
especially present in the 3 months that we've all been in quarantine? That to me is the magic of yoga, to really make us almost primed and ready for more meaningful discussion, which I've seen in my, you know, own experience has a magical way of really connecting people a whole lot more.
Yeah, and the truth is people secretly, they want to talk about this stuff, especially millennials. They want to. They just don't have the structure or platform. You know, people are so worried about being judged or being looking cool, or they're afraid if they show vulnerability, they may not be reciprocated. And there's truth to that, you know, but, you know, you're really kind of creating that environment to foster that conversation. You're passionate about, I quote, creating transformative experiences. I'm so curious about this. Can you elaborate? What makes an experience transformative? Is it the setting, the content, the people? I mean, can anyone have a transformative experience at any moment?
Great question, man. I love that. I think the short answer is absolutely. Transformation to me is a result of set and setting, a level of open-mindedness, a willingness to kind of go deep and dive in. And I feel that the way that I think about it and define it in the context of Flow and Tell is when I get emails the following day from friends saying that was one of the best, you know, times going out that I've ever had. Even better is I've now had about half a dozen relationships that have started because of people meeting at Flow and Tell, which is truly the best feeling in the world when,
yeah,
like,
two
friends reach out and say, like, I met this beautiful girl at your, you know, event and thank you so much. We're now, you know, we've been dating for 2 months. That's absolutely beautiful. And I think, you know, so it's a combination of, first of all, like the heart opening power of yoga. Right. If you just sort of put a whole bunch of people into a conference room in some stuffy office building and you say, now talk about your limiting beliefs and your deepest fears and what's holding you back, I don't think you're going to have the same results.
So they need to be primed.
Absolutely. And so, you know, before every event, we share a welcome email that talks about the theme. One of the biggest books that I think had such an impact on me on, you know, just sort of like how I go about constructing these events is by Priya Parker, called The Art of Gathering. It's a phenomenal book that any event producer, community builder, I cannot recommend enough. And one thing that she talks about is the event does not begin when the attendee walks through the doors into the physical experience. It begins the moment that they have accepted the invite. So from that moment, how are you kind of guiding them through the experience? And so we send an email out a few days in advance before every event that talks about where, you know, it's obviously where it's going to be, what's going to be the theme discussed, who are the musical guests, anything that, you know, they need to bring. And that's not only the tangibles like a water bottle, but the intangibles. An open mind, a willingness to talk about.
So in other words, it's not just the event itself. It's really all the things leading up to it as well. It's kind of curating the whole process in a way. It's a journey.
Absolutely. It's very much from start to finish. And then I think afterwards, where we send the follow-up email, everyone is encouraged to kind of stay connected. We have a lot of ways that our members do this, whether through like the event portal on the actual website, but really fostering that sense of wellness-based community so that so many times we go out in New York City, we go to a concert, we go to some dinner, and it kind of, you know, the memory is somewhat fleeting. And I think when I really kind of had this feeling that I was onto something was when the people that came to the event would reach out the next day saying, when is the next one? Like, that was the absolute best. And our kind of return, you know, visitor rate, our return guest rate is typically about, I'd say, like 25 to 40% of the events
That's
are
really
people
high.
Who are returning, which is just the best feeling in the world.
Yeah. You have an interesting background, and correct me if I'm wrong. You went to UNC Chapel Hill for undergrad. You then got an MBA from NYU Stern. You've worked mostly for tech companies your whole life, you know, including Facebook, Google, YouTube, IBM. All right, you were a consultant for Deloitte, and now you also run Stone Advisory. So what would you say to other entrepreneurs out there who are trying to do something on the side on top of their main job? And how do you kind of manage two things at once?
I love this question so much. So I started the business in, as I mentioned, mid-summer 2018. I was actually running a business development team at Facebook at the time. We can have a whole other conversation about what it was like to join Facebook 2 weeks after the Cambridge Analytica scandal. That's not the purpose of this talk. That's the next podcast. But I spent about a year and a half there, and Flow and Tell was very much a passion project. I started it, as I mentioned, the first one was on my rooftop in Chelsea, where I was living at the time. And I knew that there was something here and that I just needed to keep going with that momentum. And so to any, you know, kind of side hustle entrepreneur who's working that, you know, cushy corporate job, I mean, first of all, I think that this pandemic has, I have seen such beautiful acceleration in people finally just saying, what do I actually want to do with my life, and sure, go for it. I knew that I wasn't yet going to be in a financial position to leave until I knew that there was enough kind of momentum that had been building where I was ready to sort of cut the cord. And so,
well, and regardless, it's important to test the concept before you just jump full in.
Oh, 100%. And that's why I think, you know, focus groups, doing a couple of prototypes, right? The first three events, I did not ask for a dime from any of my friends. I wasn't comfortable yet because I didn't right. really feel like I had nailed the structure, the framework, the formula. But when we were at the year mark, it was a confluence of factors. First of all, I talk a lot about this, I've shared a lot of this at the events themselves, as well as on social media. I was really unhappy at Facebook. It was not a culture that I resonated with. Once again, we'll save that for another podcast. But I was getting increasingly excited about the prospect of Flow and Tell becoming a full-time business. And there was this kind of one, you know, it was, I remember July 4th weekend, and I had just gone away with a bunch of friends to this, you know, beautiful weekend upstate that we do every 4th of July. And I was just not happy. I realized that I was feeling this disconnect between what I was going into the office doing, you know, for my day job, but then what I really wanted to be doing in between meetings, after work, in the morning when I was waking up sure. to just, you know, get all the Flow and Tell stuff done beforehand. And I remember opening up, I like couldn't fall asleep this first night at this weekend retreat. And I couldn't, you know, I jump out of bed and I'm like, what would it actually take to make this a sustainable business? And I opened up a Google spreadsheet and I started listing out all the different revenue streams for Flow and Tell, what I could possibly do to subsidize my income, should this not potentially hit, you know, should these numbers not potentially hit. And I kind of looked at it, and I encourage everyone to do this exercise, because I kind of took a step back and I said, I think this can financially work. I think I can actually make this a sustainable business. And it's now been incredible. Here we are. So that was not even a year ago. That was about 10 and a half months ago that I kind of committed to really just going for this. It was definitely helpful to continue consulting and advising startups on the side. So I would always encourage anyone to, if your financial model does not immediately look profitable, like A, you should definitely have a little bit of cushion so that you've put some money away, so that you're going to, you know, not have to go into debt, which is certainly not fun. But it then lit the fire underneath me to explore all of these new different models of the business, such as weekend retreats, which we did our very first one about 2 weeks before quarantine. And we're really excited to do another one. And at the end of...
And you will eventually. I mean, I think the two key takeaways there for me is one, you know, test a concept, make sure it works, and then fully commit yourself, because whether you're doing something on the side or not, but to really just not give up, you know, a lot of people give up concepts. They're not sure of themselves, or they just don't really fully commit and follow through. There's a few topics I want to kind of ask you about. Regarding, well, the first is millennials and spirituality. So there seems to be somewhat of a dividing line among young people. You know, there are certain buzzwords I can immediately identify: alignment, flow, energy, right? Either you're kind of accused of being too woo-woo and in the clouds, or too grounded, business-like, and stiff. How do you bridge that gap?
You are talking to the person who is kind of always straddled.
Great. Well, maybe you can give us your answer here.
And so I think about this question a lot. And to me, there is, you know, I nothing against the extreme side of the spectrum of the super spiritual woo-woo, but my ultimate goal is to make mindfulness accessible to the average, you know, millennial, right? And so these are people that might be working at corporate jobs. They might be hustling at that, you know, mid-stage tech startup. I know that I have definitely been guilty of maybe being a little turned off if something seems a little too out there for me. And so one thing that I've really tried to do is to bridge the gap between those two poles that you just described. I don't believe that they are disparate. I think that when used appropriately and in the right context, we can leverage mindfulness to be unbelievably productive in our day-to-day work life. And that's been such a big part of my life. That's why I knew that when I was at these corporations and feeling so many people around me just constantly stressed out, running 5,000 miles from meeting to meeting, that guys, this isn't the way. There is a way to actually feel a little more relaxed. And so it began in sort of bringing this in when I was still working at Facebook, to going in and actually leading yoga classes on the rooftop of, you know, the 225 Park Ave building, to then realizing that when I go and create these events, I am not trying to get everyone holding hands singing Kumbaya. You know what I mean? That is not at all the business that I'm in. What I am in the business of is bringing people together, giving them the ability to break down their walls, to connect in a really authentic way, to share vulnerably, and watch how that deepens connection and gives way and catalyzes those transformative experiences that we were talking about. When I go into the companies, I am not saying, you know, leave your job and go be a Buddhist monk on some mountain in Tibet. I am very much preaching, here are the tools and coping mechanisms that we all have at our disposal. We just need the education and the practice that it's actually going to make us more effective in our day jobs. And so, you know, you mentioned Stone Advisory earlier. When I go and consult with startups, I'm often working with CEOs, not just in go-to-market strategy, business development, you know, the world of partnerships that I was working in as a corporate employee, but I also help them with their own mindfulness. So we'll usually begin every meeting with a guided meditation. Sometimes we'll engage their teams in a yoga flow before meetings. So I don't believe that those two worlds, I think that there's a misnomer of them having to be kind of like black and white with a brick wall separating them.
Right.
My goal is to prove that we can actually smash that brick wall down, and infusing mindfulness into the workplace, we're actually only going to end up being more productive at our jobs and be much happier when we're actually doing it.
And it's so interesting because anyone can benefit from this. You know, what's the tricky thing with millennials, it's all about the communication and it's the message. It's, you know, the key word there is accessibility, right? It's like, how do you, this can benefit everybody. It's just a question of how do you get through to them? You know, what avenue do you take? And there's not, unfortunately, one, you know, answer that unlocks that key. Mm-hmm. Or that lock. Where does religion come into play? Because more and more young people are not going to church or temple or seeking traditional organized religion. So mm-hmm. what does it mean to identify as spiritual?
Mm. So I definitely think that there's a big difference between religious and spiritual, right? Which reminds me of a really funny Daniel Tosh line where he goes, when a girl says to me, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual, I like to reply, well, I'm not honest, but you're interesting. gotta love Daniel Tosh, as crass as they come. But I believe that, like, yes, religion, I think, as we've seen, there is a growing kind of, you know, disconnect and a moving away from conventional religion, right? I grew up Jewish. I'm still very much connected to my Judaism. I definitely consider myself a pretty reformed Jew. My way of connecting to that religion is through the heritage, the culture, you know, going to a friend's house for Shabbat and having like a beautiful Shabbat experience. Spiritual, to me, could have nothing to do with religion. Spiritual is feeling that there is a greater sense of connection to this universal consciousness that we are all a part of. When we dive into our spiritual practices, we begin to feel less of like this physical construct of, you know, this sack of bones that we're, you know, our bodies are. And we begin to actually feel that it is all just kind of energy. And there's this greater thread that is kind of running through all of us. Not to now get a little too woo-woo, but that is what spiritual means to me. It's this acknowledgement that, you know, ego can come in and play such a powerful role in, you know, tricking the mind to think about, you know, material wealth is important, for example, right. And success is the amount of money in my bank account. Developing a spiritual practice has actually shown me that all of that stuff, yeah, look, it's, I'm not going to lie, it's nice to be able to not have to be financially stressed, sure. and covering your base, you know, kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs is critical in order to get to that, you know, top of the pyramid of self-actualization. But I think when we develop spiritual practices, which I don't necessarily know that a lot of people's connection to religion gives them, we begin to identify with that greater collective consciousness, that we are all a part of something greater, that the true importance of life, what really means, you know, what's meaningful in this life is not material wealth, but how much we've loved, how much we've leaned in and developed beautiful relationships. Perhaps most importantly, how much do we love ourselves? When we get up in the morning and that, you know, first moment that we flip on the lights in the bathroom and encounter ourselves in the mirror, are we meeting ourselves with radical self-love and acceptance? And I think that for me, a spiritual practice has done massive amount of work in helping me, you know, get to that place. And it's not linear, right? It's not like I'm here and I'm always going to be here. We all have bad days. I'm the first to acknowledge that there are, you know, days when some of those negative emotions can always creep back in. But having that mindfulness practice, having a spiritual connection, I think helps us get through the tough days with a lot more ease and clarity.
Well, and on the topic of self-acceptance, I mean, not to get political, but I have to ask you, given everything that is going on in the world regarding inequality and racial disparity, what role can Flow and Tell play and the yoga community as a whole?
Great question. And I think this was a question that I really struggled with when the George Floyd murder happened 2 weeks ago, because as a white male, what's appropriate for me to say? And what I ultimately realized is that this is actually the time to just listen and to let the Black voices that have been so, you know, squashed down, to really amplify them. And so the role that I think Flow and Tell can play is not saying, here's my perspective as a white male of what's going on, but to rather share the resources, all of these incredible organizations that are helping the Black Lives Matter movement. I actually finally sent out an email today, actually, to the Flow Intel listserv that basically says we stand in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. I was kind of paralyzed, honestly, about what like, is it right to say something as a white male? How do I sort of go about this? And so what I believe we have the opportunity to do is to engage a lot more of those Black voices. And one thing that I'm working on right now, I'm actually really excited to be releasing. I guess this is kind of the first time I'm sharing it publicly.
Great. We love breaking news here.
Breaking news coming to you first on Wise Millennial. As I mentioned earlier, I've been performing as a musician as well for over 20 years.
Yes, you drums, have a special talent, by the way, too, beatboxing, which I wanted to ask you about. But
yes, I have been performing as a beatbox artist for, 2001. So I started playing drums in high school, and then that, you know, kind of parlayed into beatboxing. Had a brief stint on American Idol, which you could find the video on online. I'll let your followers go check that out. But I realized that, like, it would be incredibly tone deaf to put something out in the world as a just as a solo piece as a white male. And so I just a few days ago reached out to a very dear friend and brother of mine, Darut, who's part of Wadada Music and one of the most talented MCs and vocalists that I've ever collaborated with. And I said, hey, man, I wrote this hook for a song that I'm calling Ally. And it's basically a question. And the chorus is, can I be your ally? Can I fight right by your side? And then we sing together. When you want to cry, just hold your head high, because I'll be your ally. And I feel like that right now is, as white people, what we need to do. We do not have the solutions to the problems that we first started centuries ago when we created these systems of police brutality that are based on in history, you know, almost disproportionately, you know, violenced against Black people. You have a 7 times more higher likelihood of being a victim of police brutality as a Black person than you do a white person. So I think Flow and Tell and this collaboration with Darut, we have the ability as wellness practitioners to invite in a lot more of the dialogue amongst Black people. We need to engage the Black community a whole lot more. If we're just a bunch of quote unquote woke white people sitting around a dinner table talking about how we're going to help the Black Lives Matter movement, that doesn't go nearly as far as engaging the Black community. And so not only is this collaboration with Darut, we're actually releasing it on Saturday at this virtual music festival called Music is the Medicine. You can check that out. It's being put on by Growing Heart Farm. Growingheartevents.com is the link where you can kind of find out where to join on Saturday.
Yeah, we'll definitely share those.
We're releasing that to the thank you. We're releasing that to the, you know, kind of external audience then. But then I'm also now working on engaging a lot more Black yoga instructors, Black conversation facilitators, Black musicians, which I've done in the past, but it certainly gave me a chance to step back and go, have I actually done as much as I can to encourage diversity at my events? And to really now say, I'm proud of what I've done, but I think I can actually do better. And so leveraging this platform that we've now created, this listserv of 3,000 plus people that we've garnered over the last year and a half, to now really take that as a platform to amplify the Black voices. It is a time for, I think, a lot of white folk to just sort of not sit back, but to listen, elevate, and amplify. And that's what I've trying to do.
No, I love that. I love that. And that's a great collaboration. And I'm excited to see it and hear it.
Awesome.
What is something you wish someone had told you 5 years ago, or you had told yourself that you had to learn on your own, but would have made life so much easier had you known?
The first kind of, you know, thing that's coming into my mind is to just don't sweat the small stuff and most of the shit is small stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I look back at my 20s, my early 30s, and, you know, I think about how stressed I got all those times that I was just, you know, okay, I'm in a job that I don't really like, but, you know, once I get this next job, I'll be happy. And once I, you know, meet the woman of my dreams, I'll be happy. You know,
right.
Happiness is not waiting for us around some corner that we're never going to turn. It's right here, right now.
If I just
right
get
now.
This one thing, then I'll be happy.
Exactly. There's a great, I don't know if you follow Wait But Why, Tim Urban's blog, who's one of my favorite bloggers. He's got this one post that's all about, you know, if you kind of think of your life as a frame, it's like you get really excited for the high-rise apartment, and then you're in the high-rise apartment, and you're like, okay, I've now been here for a few years, and man, I'm not happy anymore. I want the nice car now. And you go out right. and get the nice car, and then it's like all these things, you know, slowly fly out of the frame. And so I think if I could tell myself in my early 20s, well, I guess you said 5 years ago, so that would be,
well,
you know, right. 31.
You're a young guy, Jonathan.
young at heart. So if at 31 I could know, like, you know, take risks, don't sweat the small stuff. Everything works out in the end. And if it hasn't worked out yet, it's just not the end. So just keep going.
Yeah, no, I love that. Thank you for sharing. How can people get involved and learn more about you?
So definitely flowintel.com. Hop on over there. Jump onto our listserv. We usually send a newsletter out, even though we're, you know, not doing physical events right now, for obvious reasons. You know, we're doing a lot in the virtual world. You know, predominantly focused on employee wellness, because I think that that's really where we need to, you know, be focused, giving people the tools and methodologies during this time to know how to cope with all these new stresses. I'm also on Instagram, Jay Stone. I post a lot of my music stuff there, a lot of yoga stuff as well. And then Flow Intel Wellness is the Instagram site for Flow Intel.
Awesome, man. Yeah. I got to check out your beatboxing.
I'm happy to even, I mean, if that was a subtle hint that you want a little bit right now, we could certainly
sure. Do a quick demonstration.
I mean, why not? Let's just jump into a boom. Wise millennial.
Wow. I love it. I love it. He just did that on the fly, no preparation. That's amazing. You are very talented, my friend. Multi-talented.
Thank you, Peter.
Very impressive. My wise millennial friends, it's hard to follow up. We all want to find purpose and clarity in life, and yoga is much more than an exercise routine. It's a tool. It pulls from a rich history and many traditions and helps improve your mind, body, and soul. Jonathan has dedicated himself to bring you really unique experiences that connect you on a deeper level with yourself and others, and to find calm and balance in your life. I strongly encourage and invite you to learn more about his community and get involved if you think it's the right fit for you. You have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. Jonathan, thank you so much for being here and sharing your thoughts.
Such a pleasure, Peter. Super inspired by the work you're doing, and thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to the Wise Millennial Podcast. To join our community and participate IRL, follow us on Instagram at Wise Millennial and go to wisemillennial.com. Do you have a community to share? Leave us a positive review and mention it in the comments. Don't leave us a negative review. That's messed up AF. Tune in next episode for more tips and info about how millennials like us can find true happiness. Until next time, stay wise.